Time and we are gonna I'm gonna call the Board Commission meeting to order. So Eric, can you make sure we have a quorum?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
All right, it's now 2 p.m. and I see that we have you and we have Commissioner Fitzgerald and Commissioner Corgi and Commissioner Don Carlos. And I see we have Commissioner Clunan. I'm searching for Commissioner Creuzot.
I am here.
Oh, there you are, man. Okay, I think, and finally, I thought I heard Commissioner Meese, but I don't seem to see him quite this.
Well, I'm there. You just can't see.
There's Roy.
Yes. All righty, sir. Okay, then I guess we have a there he is, and there we have a quorum, and I'll just read the announcement then to go into closed session if you don't mind. It is now 2:01 p.m. The Port Commission of the Port Eastern Authority of Harris County, Texas will now convene in a closed meeting as permitted by the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code to conduct a private consultation with attorneys, including consultation regarding the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers construction agreements, 33 U.S. C 5D and 2236 and Texas Special District Local Laws Code 5007.007B. Deliberate regarding real estate, including disposition of Barber's Cut Terminal and Beltway 8 vicinity properties, economic development negotiations or incentives, employment and evaluation of public officers and employees, and security related matters. The Port Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
Okay, so commissioners, you need to exit this meeting and then go into the executive committee meeting, which should be on your calendars as well. And then we will be back in regular session after we adjourn that meeting and go through the rest of the agenda, which will also include public comments as well. So thank you. We'll see you in the regular session. I'm leaving the meeting, going to executive. We have a quorum, Eric, let me know.
Easier said than done sometimes.
Well. We will get the meeting started as soon as we know we have a quorum, and Eric's going to let me know.
Yes.
Eric, is this list that you have people want to speak? Is it?
That's the final list, sir. Yes.
Okay.
And I think we now have a quorum, so I'll just read out the names and we can go from there. Commissioner Campo, obviously. Commissioner Clunan.
Here.
Commissioner Fitzgerald.
Here.
I see Commissioner Meese.
Here.
And Commissioner Corgi, are you there?
Here.
And Commissioner Caruso?
I'm here.
And Commissioner Don Carlos? Okay. Well, with the exception of Commissioner Don Carlos, we have all in attendance.
Well, I'm sure he's just, will be here in a second. So let's go ahead and reconvene the special meeting of the Port Commission of the Port Authority of Houston. What is it? 3:01. Sorry for the long executive session, but some important points to discuss. So the meeting's reconvened. Let me just take a couple of minutes just in our chairman's remarks on our agenda. The discussion today, I'm really excited about this because this is, you know, we're going to be a seminal moment here on Project 11 when we get really close to signing this PPA or agreement on Project 11. But I will tell you that I've been really proud of our team at Port Houston, the Corps of Engineers, and all of the industry participants for helping get us to this point where we're on the precipice of getting started on the Project 11 real deepening and widening of the Houston Ship Channel, which we all know from the economic perspective is an imperative for our region to continue to drive economic prosperity by creating jobs and commerce. And we know today in the post-pandemic supply chain disruption world where it's taking forever to get any kind of products out that our supply chain and our Houston supply chain is really important. And we need to continue to invest in that and get it done. And I'm really excited about the discussion we're going to have here today. So with that, I will move to our public comment. And we have, I think, four people that are here. We have Alu Nasser from the Environmental Defense Fund. And Eric, what is our normal process here? A minute?
Well, for an item on the agenda, it's 3 minutes. And otherwise,
3 minutes, okay. So we have 3 minutes. So just be mindful of the time. And we will, Eric will let you know if we're getting close to that. So Mr. Nasser, are you ready to go? Can we connect you in? Kelly, have we?
Yes,
yeah,
I am. Can you hear me? There we go. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Ms. Nasser?
Ms. Nasser?
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you now. Go ahead.
I can hear you. I could. I don't know what happened.
For a second.
You're on mute, Ms. Nasser. Your computer is muted. If you're on the phone, please speak up.
Eric, this is Mike Frazier.
Yes, sir. We see you. Ms. Nasser?
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Go ahead, please.
Thank you so much. My apologies. I feel like I was calling in and it was not working. So thank you for your patience as we work in the Zoom world. I appreciate the opportunity to provide public comments this afternoon. Again, my name is Alu Nasser and I'm with the Environmental Defense Fund. We are very glad to engage in discussions with the port staff and commission when these opportunities present themselves to make port operations more sustainable, both from an air quality perspective and also from an efficiency standpoint. To this end, we've been participating in the Sustainability Action Team meetings, I guess a couple of weeks ago, and we're really looking forward to seeing what concrete actions emerge from this process in the next series of meetings next week. We have, as an organization, remained really consistent about our concerns as it relates to air quality impacts to the region from port operations. When the CASP was released, we shared in a series of meetings with port leadership and staff the concerns that we had as that the CASP is currently written, it's not dealing with a couple of critical things. Specifically, an acknowledgement of impacts of port operations off port property from things like drayage trucks. So we remain hopeful that what emerges from the SAT process might be projects of this nature. We remain concerned that efforts to swap out old, dirty, and unreliable cargo handling equipment will occur only when the equipment reaches its useful life, versus making prioritizations to have those actions occur today, sooner. But more specifically and relevant to the agenda today is we remain concerned about the dredging emissions related to Project 11. I've been participating in these commission meetings, and we've been hearing the project characterized as short-term pain for long-term gain. And I would like to push back on some elements of that sentiment. We believe at EDF that the over 3,600 tons of NOx and the 200 and almost 245 tons of VOCs that Project 11 will generate during the 6-year project could cause problems for the region, specifically contribute to new violations to the 2008 and 2015 ozone standard. We are, you know, emissions in the Houston Ship Channel are a zero-sum game. So someone will be responsible for mitigating the pollution from Project 11. And our concern is that by kind of kicking that can down the road, industry may have to make up the difference at possibly a higher per ton cost. And third, these emissions will undeniably have a serious impact on the health of overburdened communities adjacent to the port. And while the long-term gain has been characterized as increased efficiencies to port operations, our concern is that the improvements to air pollution from this increased efficiency could be offset from projected traffic increases. We've seen projections for great growth at the port, and the concern is that, you know, despite increased efficiencies, that they might not decrease the hoteling emissions, for example, from more ships at berth. So,
Ms. Nasser, your time's up.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the chance.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions or comments? Okay. Our next speaker is Adrian Shelley. Do you have a, are you in good shape there with your, I see your name. You need to unmute.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you have the stage.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate again the opportunity to speak here today. I want to echo what my colleague, Ms. Nasser, said about participation of advocates, the public health advocates such as myself and her and some others who are on the call today. We have taken all of the opportunities that have been provided to us, you know, to participate in this way, and have been very consistent about you know, our message and what we're asking for. And so I just want to reiterate, right, the total scale of Project 11 as we understand it is about 3,600 tons of NOx over the life of the project. At its peak, we're looking at about 1,300 tons of NOx in a single year. And it is true that the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality has made a determination that the port does not have to specifically offset those emissions as part of our efforts toward ozone compliance in the region. But it's also true that those emissions are coming and that they will contribute to ozone precursor pollution and that they will contribute to the ozone non-attainment condition that we're in and likely to stay in for the foreseeable future. And so, as Ms. Nasser said, the decision not to mitigate those pollutants is a decision to push that obligation off onto industry and onto other actors in the region. And that includes a lot of the port's partners, right, who are themselves responsible for ozone precursor pollution in the region. And then there's also, of course, other pollutants, hazardous pollutants, particulate matter, which have a much greater health impact, but do not have the same, you know, non-attainment considerations. But in fact, we know that, you know, the health impacts of especially particulate matter pollution are far greater than that even of ozone pollution. So while the port has cover, again, from the TCEQ as regards its obligations to mitigate, it has other obligations to public health in the region, and you know, the efforts toward a sustainability action team, a clean air strategy plan, those efforts are limited in their effectiveness when they do not account for these very real emissions that are out there. And the last thing I want to say is, you know, in the context of Project 11, we're going to be talking about the harbor fee, and the harbor fee is being assessed to raise revenue to pay for Project 11. This is the kind of model that the port could use to pay for pollution reductions and for public health and community investment. A harbor fee, a container fee, something like that could raise revenue to offset the pollution and provide other benefits. Other ports have done this around the nation. The port talks about itself as a regional leader. Yeah. That's leadership. Leadership is asking everyone in the region to contribute.
Your time is up, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I do appreciate your contributions to the workshops that we had. And this is an ongoing dialogue, and we're on a journey, not a destination. So we appreciate your time and effort on that. The next person up is Stephanie Thomas from Public Citizen as well. So, Stephanie, you're up. I think I saw you first click.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what happened to my video, but my audio is working, right?
There you go. Yes.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Well, good afternoon, commissioners, chairman. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak. I do want to draw your attention, in addition to the comments that my colleagues have been making, just a bit about process. Sometimes the Port Commission obviously needs to meet outside of the normal meeting times, but for the public, it's actually a bit challenging to follow these special meetings. And I don't know if y'all are aware of this. I just want to bring this to your attention that when you go to the Port Commission website, the regular meetings are listed, but when special meetings arise, they are not directly listed. You have to scroll down and uncover the meetings through the agendas. So I want to bring this to light just because you may not be having to go through the same process to track when these meetings are happening, but as a matter of transparency to the community, it would be helpful to have those meetings listed underneath the meeting section on the website, if that makes sense. It just makes it a lot easier for the community to know what's going on.
Okay, great, noted. Kelly and or some other folks on the call, let's make sure that we get those meetings posted at the same place as the other meetings, so there's no confusion.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. Yes.
So right, I ask, just for the record, this first special meeting we've had in a long time.
Am I right? I think special meetings just come up now and then, and that's probably
saying.
Why it's not handled in the kind of normal course of business, probably,
right.
But it probably should be, and I agree.
We don't have that many.
Yeah, that's right.
Chairman, this is Roger. That's well noted, and certainly look into that. That's not the intention, but anyway, we'll look into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
For what it's worth, I agree with the speaker that we should make that more user friendly.
Yep. Okay. Our fourth speaker and last speaker is Leticia Blaza, Government Relations Director, Community Outreach, Bear Alliance. So, Leticia, it's your turn. See if I can see you.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. So I'm here to obviously air or just echo what my colleagues here have said today. Air Alliance Houston, we focus on air quality concerns in the region. As I've mentioned many times, that you guys have probably heard me say numerous times, I live here. Yes, I get paid to do this, maybe not as much as most of y'all, but I truly care about our region and our air quality because I am very concerned about what's going on, as are the rest of the community that lives here. And so that's why it's important to be transparent when the port says it's going to be transparent, no matter what meeting is going to take place for them to be able to participate, even in the event that they couldn't, we could still read comments from public. However, I'm also here to continue to talk about the things that we've been saying this whole time. There still aren't any real conversations around how the port is going to be mitigating 1,300 tons of NOx. You know, these are major air pollutants that are being generated by the port activities. You know, that's also to include carbon monoxide and VOCs, sulfur oxides, and of course, you know, particulate matter. And the health effects of the prolonged exposures to these compounds include respiratory diseases, cardiovascular diseases, lung cancer, and even premature death. It's also been linked to preterm labor. There's numerous studies that have found that emissions from diesel engines commonly used in the freight industry are significantly more harmful to humans than those from the petrol vehicles. And numerous human epidemiological studies have found that diesel exhaust exposure directly increases cancer risk. In addition to the diesel exhaust, the negative health effects of exposure to inhaled particulate matter are also well documented. These particulate matters get into your lungs, and they're small enough to pass tissues and enter into the bloodstream. They can trigger inflammations, which eventually cause heart and lung failures. So, you know, we understand that there, or I'm hoping that the port understands there's a problem. You guys explain that, you know, that there is a problem, but what are we doing to reduce the air pollution before this project gets on its way? You know, from ships, from diesel engines. I mean, this should be a top priority. I mean, we understand that there's, you know, costs involved and maybe even politically challenging, but at what end are we going to continue to pound on the community's health, and not to mention everything else that's going to literally have to adhere to the challenges that the port is going to be facing? You know, the first step, you know, there's a lot of steps that need to be taken, you know, something that can fully monitor, some sort of a program that we can.
Your time is up, Ms. Okay. Block. Thank you.
I appreciate your comments, and we are having a meeting next week, or I guess the week after a Port Commission meeting, to talk about our sustainability workshops that we just completed. And as part of this discussion, we are going to put specific programs in place, and we just need to work together as a community and continue to drive this discussion. Rich, we are going to talk about that next at the next meeting, correct? I see you.
An ongoing process, and we'll give an update next meeting, and then more detail in July.
Okay. All right. Thanks. We'll now go on to the rest of our meeting. And we'll move on to item F1, which is the staff update and deliberation on the potential Houston Ship Channel Project 11. So let's go ahead and go through that discussion. Who's leading that? Is that Rich?
Yes, that's me. Thank you. I'm going to show 4 slides. Hopefully they're visible. If they're not, let me know. But good afternoon, Chairman and Commissioners. Today, I'll try to provide a brief status update for Project 11, including where we are with the overall timeline, where the specific project designs sit, and where we are proceeding with procurement plans. If you have specific technical questions, as you know, we have Charlie and Lori and others who can answer those today if they come up. So, this slide is an updated overall timeline. Just to remind everybody, we've been talking about this for decades. The feasibility study started in July, culminating in the Chief's report, the congressional authorization, and the New START, very important New START designation, all in 2020 and 2021. And it also shows the major decisions and commitments by this commission to commit capital to project designs and other aspects to accelerate the project by as much as a decade. I'd like to direct your attention to the right side of this and really talk about the items that have happened since our last update. First, the designs have continued to progress, and I have some more detail on the next slide, but the 100% designs are all done as the headline. Secondly, Project 11 did officially move from planning to execution with your approval of the first contract in April for the preparation of the Beltway 8 site. As you know, we had a groundbreaking event with Chairman Campo and Commissioner Clunan present, as well as our partner in the Army Corps of Engineers, Colonel Vale. And the physical notice to proceed date for that project is next week, June 21st. That's just been decided. And thirdly, we engaged industry for the third time on May 26th to ensure they have a clear understanding of the process, timeline, and expectations for the project. And finally, today we are discussing the project partnership agreement with the Army Corps, which is our contract document governing execution of the project, and which we hope to design or to sign later this month. Signing the PPA is a critical step to enable the project to go forward and for the Corps to have the time needed to let their own contracts and fulfill the requirements of the New START. And as with any contract, the terms are complex, but we believe the way it has been configured allows for maximum acceleration and maximum value creation. So you've seen this slide many times, so it's just a reminder, but also just to make reference to terminology. We've talked about the project in 6 segments, but with the main bay reach broken into 3 separated elements, there's really 8 parts. And we will be contracting this as many as 12 separate contracts, probably 8 led by the Port of Houston and 4 led by the Army Corps. This slide next shows the status of those contracts. And our team have completed the designs of all the segments 1 through 4. As we've said from the beginning, segments 5 and 6 are gonna take the traditional route, so they've been deferred from this accelerated scope. These designs go through reviews with the Army Corps and they receive comments. And so we're reiterating those in a resubmittal of comments addressing all of those. And after that, we take the packages through what the Corps calls a BCOES, which is really a readiness review. It stands for biddability, constructability, operability, environmental, and sustainability. So that will happen, and I'll direct again your attention to the red ink on the right. That's the work that remains to be done. Our team has done a great job. The amount of attention to detail is incredible, and you know, we have just a few remaining steps to get this design ready, and as you know, we're on track to execute the project by contract number 2, which was let in April, and more to come. And that would be the last slide. So so project 11 is the number of packages. There's a dozen in total. As I mentioned before, we have moved into execution with award of package 2. And that will serve to prepare for segment 4's dredging material placement. The Army Corps is also executing its first contract this year, and that's required to fulfill the New START rules. And they plan to advertise in July of 2021. And that's for mitigation work and oyster reef work. And they will expect to sign those contracts in Q4 of this year. The next pieces of the project are to get started on the main bay reach in segments 1A and 1B from the channel opening up to Redfish Island at segment 1A, as well as commence on some pipeline removals, and plans are to advertise these contracts in July and June of this year. And then the remaining packages will commence advertising in late 2021 or early 2022. And as I mentioned, 5 and 6, which are packages 10 through 12, will wait till the rest is done in 2024 or thereabouts. So with that, I can pause for any questions.
Commissioners, any questions?
Rich, did you send us these copies of these you're showing?
Oh, absolutely. Kelly can transmit them.
Yeah, I'd like to have them. Thank you very much.
You bet.
I think Roger sent out the construction one a week or so ago along with another map, but go ahead. Did somebody else have a comment? Any other questions or comments? If not, I'll turn it over to Tim.
Hi, good afternoon. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Good, thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman and Commissioners. Good to see you in little boxes today. I'll be brief, 2 slides, words for you today. I won't spend a lot of time on the first bullet other than to mention, as Roger has kept you updated, we continue to see strong results through May, clearly above last year's performance. That's an easy comparison, as they say, but we're about 8% from a revenue perspective, about 8% over 2019. So really good trajectory, strong container demand, and seeing a nice bounce back in break bulk as well. So simple point is we're beginning this phase from a very strong position financially and for the business overall. The current scenario, as we've been discussing today, really results relates to around a $550 million financing requirement in the short term. As Chairman mentioned today, I'm seeing that sometime mid-2022, and then a second borrowing in 2024. With that, the second bullet is very important to the discussion, which is if we look a little bit longer term, over 10 years, this $550 million borrowing plus ongoing business, which we'll talk about those assumptions in a minute, but with regards to our ability to fund our own capital plan, to fund this portion of the project, there is no impairment on our own growth plans and our own ability to fund our capital over this 10-year horizon. We do, however, continue a rolling 2050 in this case, look at our business. Obviously, tons of assumptions as we look that far out. But as you look into the future with regards to our next container terminals, be that 2035, 2040 for the next container terminal to keep up with market demand. And of course, Project 12 is on the horizon, believe it or not. That will require some sort of supplemental financial support out there that far. Again, those are all models, liquidity models, and they seem to be holding certainly solid today. I should pause there on that point and let you ask any questions in that regard.
Commissioners, you have any questions? Tim, this is the model you just sent us through. You've walked us through before, right? That we had a few months ago.
Yeah, it is effectively the story, thankfully, is really unchanged from our January update, where we were ballparking $500 million. This now is a little more crisp, believe it or not, at 550. So the position hasn't changed, and the story is the same, Chairman.
Okay, Commissioner, can I ask a question, please?
Yes, sir.
Tim, I see your projections is 3% growth. How does those numbers change if you end up getting 5% and 6% growth within the next 2 years?
Well that's right. And those are really compound annual growth rates generically, because we do see, of course, as we see from the state controller's office, we see growth rates at 5-6%. Or so, Commissioner Fitzgerald, for this year and next year, trending back down to, again, the more normal 3. But you're right, and I was going to give those caveats. I'll do that now. It's an excellent question, which is growth rates double, let's say, and stay at that 6-8-10% range. It would pull in the need for that container expansion, container terminal expansion, of course, much sooner. The 10-year horizon, of course, that we're looking at through 2030, 2031, does, of course, continue the redevelopment, additional capacity at BCT. The full build-out of Bayport actually finishes in the 2030s, early 2030s. But yes, to your point, should that double up that demand on us, then certainly we could have a need facing us sooner than that.
In addition, if you doubled your growth rates, you also increase your cash flow pretty dramatically too, which would increase your financial strength going forward as well.
That's correct. All of that, of course, as you know, Chairman, is modeled. But to your point, our credit capacity would grow with that volume, revenue, cash generating growth. That's correct.
Yeah, remind me, and the commissioners. In our 2040 plan, do we have a plan for a new container terminal in that 2040 plan? Or what are the, what's the thinking of when the region will need another container truck?
Rich, I'll take a shot, but Rich, you can correct me. So in these models, the short answer is yes. You know, that's a living, breathing document. So we do have what the team has labeled Terminal X, beginning construction sometime late 2030s, 2038, 2040 or so. So yes, there is one container terminal included in these, in this rollout.
Okay. So, but Tim, and I don't know for sure, you know, all the analysis and stuff that you're looking at, but, you know, just looking back since the Panama Canal has opened up, how much expansion we've had every year, increase in business. And I just don't, and I, as I stated earlier, I don't want to see us get in a situation where we say we got the money today to do everything we need to do, and this business goes to 5 or 6%, and then we wake up one day and we don't have the money. And then that's the only way we get the money at that point is adding more costs to our customers. Is that right?
Yes, that is again possible, depending on what that growth rate looks like, Commissioner. I'm hesitant to throw a number. We are probably from a compound growth rate from that time in the high single digits. To your point, 7 to 9% growth would be my guess. If that continues for the next 5 to 10 years, yeah, we could have other scenarios to run for sure.
Yeah. The projections that I'm looking at, what I'm hearing, it's not impossible we might not be in those percentages. We very well could be in those percentages quicker than we think of growth.
And that's a good thing.
Yes. That's a good thing.
It's a good problem to have. It's a good problem to have.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you. The third bullet, we talked through just the financial caveats that, of course, these models have hundreds of assumptions in them. Again, a moderate growth rate, long-term, 3 to 3.5%. And of course, that requires infrastructure in the back office, if you will. So all that is considered in the cash generating models we have literally through 2050. A quick note on the last bullet, just a heads up, if you will. Our intention in the July commission is to bring to the Port Commission for their consideration the approval of the underwriting and bond and disclosure council teams for the eventual bond offering. So heads up on that. You'll recall in May, you approved the broader pool of those teams, and we'll begin selecting teams. We'd like to get that done and underway now, because as you'll see on the next bullet, there are several instruments and documents that should, we can go ahead and get those things out of the way. So we'd like those teams in place sooner rather than later. So no action for today, just an FYI. And then lastly, September, perhaps in the fourth quarter, bring forward the master resolution and related instruments. Master resolution effectively is the governing documents behind our financing and our borrowings. So FYI on that. In addition, our models do show the need to continue some sort of credit facility. That takes the form of the note purchase program today. It effectively gives us a line of credit or a backstop to award new projects against, so that, again, we can continue the timely addition of capital and capacity. And we're watching market conditions very carefully with regards to interest rates. It's not completely out of the question that we couldn't come to you in the fourth quarter and ask for your authorization for a bond offering. We're watching that very carefully. As you know, they do float, and there's conventional wisdom on both sides of that equation as to where they will go. But that's why that's in italics, in case we were to come to you before the end of the year. Any questions on that? I'll touch on the harbor fee briefly.
Commissioners, okay, go ahead.
All right. As you know, and Eric actually mentioned code with regards to the harbor fee, this is governed by actually word, I believe 86, section 2236, dealing with port or harbor dues. As we've said before, there are really very few known uses of this law in effect to date, and little to no relevant case law exists to help guide the interpretation. Obviously, as you've heard us say before, the fee must be based on the benefit from that the benefit a vessel receives, proportional to that benefit that they would gain from Project 11. The easiest example to think of that is from a widening perspective. Let's say the segment one or the bay reach. Most vessels can in fact be charged harbor or user fee in that regard because they're all benefiting from the widening. You contrast that with deepening in segment four, let's say, and that then has to be more specific to the design depth of those vessels that would benefit from that deepening. So it will vary, the harbor, the fee itself will vary by segment, the costs associated with that, the benefits that vessels received, and that mathematically, of course, will generate a fee that we believe will be ultimately sustainable and defensible. There is a team working, external team, outside counsel, and other engineering firm helping us work with the study to segment the determine the benefits by segment. We're looking at the transportation costs that were used by the Army Corps of Engineers to substantiate the project. Also looking at the safety element, which would of course be applicable, we believe, to each vessel type. So a big body of work going on today. I should mention in fairness that our staff economist, Jordan Frisbee, is really at the lead of this. So I don't want to take any credit for his very hard work. We said before, implementation of this will require almost a year during which any party withstanding could challenge that fee. Technically, it's around 260 days from initiation by registering in the federal register through ultimate passage into a tariff item for the Port Authority. So just to make sure your heads around that, when we could start. Of course, there could be parallel paths as we start the 256 days and we complete a segment so that we could begin levying a fee as soon as possible after that. Right now, we're anticipating a public discussion draft in a month or two. Of course, we would begin that by bringing that to the Port Commission to get their understanding and their agreement with the different alternatives and scenarios, et cetera. And then, of course, as is the final bullet, alignment with relevant parties, our industry partners, et cetera, absolutely essential before a user fee could be put in place today. So a brief on the harbor fee. Again, the teams are working very, very diligently on that, and we look forward to coming back again to this body within a month or two to share some details on that. With that, I'll stop. Chairman, any questions?
Commissioners? One thing I'll just add while many people are thinking about questions. So the idea of a harbor fee, of course, was proposed by industry, and it was the industry, you know, wants to help expedite the channel, the deepening and widening of the channel. And we have always sort of had this discussion about the channel will get built over a period of time, and a normal federal process, business as usual, takes around 10 years or more to build the channel. Industry was very supportive in helping get legislation in WERDA 2020 passed and the New START, and have been very supportive and has indicated that they were willing to pay for half the cost. This fee structure is a product of industry coming together, but then ultimately the Port Authority having to take over the process to make sure that the fee was produced in accordance with federal law. With all that said, the channel will continue to get built. We'll still look at these fee alternatives and provide a discussion with the public about the fees to make sure that they aren't overly burdensome on industry and on ships. We obviously don't want to kill the golden goose by having too much cost a burden be on business, but on the other hand, someone has to pay for the deepening and widening. And again, the deepening and widening will get completed over time, and to the extent we get cash in or fees produced or a mechanism that helps us fund that, that will determine the speed at which the project goes forward. So with that, go ahead, Tim, unless there are any other questions. Okay, go ahead, Tim.
That's all I had, Chairman. I'm done. Okay.
Great. All right, so where are we on the agenda then? Let's see here.
Item F3 is the only proposed action.
Okay, great. So any other questions or comments, Commissioner? If not, we'll move on to item F3, which is the action. Eric, I think you're going to, you have the action in front of you, but you're going to modify this, I believe. So Eric, why don't you have that discussion?
Yes. The agenda as written, the main aspect of the agenda, authorize the executive director to enter into a project partnership agreement with the Army Corps of Engineers in connection with construction of Project 11. And I understand we, Commissioner Corgi, you have proposed a motion, which I can read if you like.
I have it. I can read it.
All right, go ahead.
Sure. Corgi, go ahead and read your motion.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move to amend agenda item F3, which authorizes the executive director to enter into a PPA with the Army Corps of Engineers in connection with Project 11, to provide that he has authority to do such things as are reasonable or necessary in his opinion to give effect to that authority. The first bullet point, on the terms discussed in executive session and accepting any material change to such terms.
Yeah, those two bullets are the amendment.
I second, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none. Are there any negative votes? Okay, hearing none. The motion passes as amended. That's great. Okay, at this point, I think that's the end of our formal business today. I just want to take the opportunity to thank the entire port team for getting to the point where we are. And I really appreciate your hard work and getting us there. I also like to thank Colonel Vail and the Army Corps of Engineers for their partnership and their hard work in getting us to where we are as well. This is a team effort. Industries involved. I appreciate all the industry support that we have received, and I know there's a lot of issues on the table from environmental groups and what have you, and we will have broader discussions about that coming forth in the future. We appreciate all of the folks that participated in our sustainability workshops in the last couple of weeks. We're compiling that information, and we'll share it with you in the next several weeks. So with that said, I appreciate everybody being here. Any other commissioners' comments or parting remarks?
Okay, everybody's down at the water. You want to go
there
down?
There you go. There? Sounds like a good one. Okay, great. Well, thanks. I'll formally adjourn the meeting then, or adjourn the meeting. So we'll see you at the next meeting. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one.
Bye, thanks.